Yeah, it's such a catchy tune, isn't it?
Eh? And it just gets me up and going on a Friday at 8:30.
It's the theme tune for Free Speech Fridays, where we find a couple of free-speaking Kiwis, put them on the platform and discuss the issues of the week. I'm really looking forward to this week's session, as I always do. Joining us, my favourite German immigrant, Oliver Hartwich from the New Zealand Initiative. Oliver, he loves Ireland, Oliver, but he is a New Zealander at heart. Oliver, lovely to have you with us, mate. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Sean. Great to be with you.
All right. And from New Zealand First, and I noticed him really embarrassing himself, doing some sort of rap video, campaign video, that even if he was 30, he would be too old to do, but at least he's giving it a crack. He's on the campaign trail for New Zealand First. Candidate for Northland, Shane Jones. How are you, Shane?
It's the land of parody and satire.
All right, okay. No, no. Did it go viral? No, it didn't, did it?
Not as certainly not as extensive as my first effort.
All right. But look, the world loves a trier. That is for true. Look, guys, I just want to start with the fact that in a very quiet sort of way, apart from the Greens, the Greenpeace making dicks of themselves, the 54th Parliament is over. What do you think it will be remembered for, Oliver?
I think it will be remembered as the first parliament under MMP with an absolute majority for a single party. That was the thing that wasn't supposed to happen when MMP was introduced. And unfortunately, I have to admit, this was a stupid import from Germany. But anyway, we've had this now, and I hope we will never see it again.
Well, it achieved so little, didn't it, Shane? For the only MMP parliament to have an absolute majority.
Oh, it just showed when you have unfettered power, but you have no plan, you have no depth. I think the only thing that people will recall will be the protest outside parliament and Mallard turning on the hose and awful music.
Yeah, it is. I cannot help but look at it as a massive missed political opportunity, and it ends with the person who created that majority, Jacinda Ardern, gone and in the political wilderness. The party that had that majority, I think by all objective thing, they're in big trouble, Oliver, for, you know, in 6 weeks' time when we go to the polls.
Yes, without a doubt. When we go to the polls, we need someone to do a turnaround job on this country. We just don't need marginally better management because we are talking about an everything crisis in this country after the last 3 or maybe 6 years even. So everything is broken. We have a crime out of control. We have an education system that doesn't deliver. We've got a health system that's falling apart. Nothing got better in the last 3 years. They've had the chance of their lifetime with an absolute majority that enabled them to do anything they like. And I think they wrecked the country.
Well, no. They made us kinder and they made us woker, and that's a good thing. All right. The one thing we do have to look forward to, perhaps, Shane, is a wonderful national tax policy, or they managed to convince most of the country of that this week, I think. It was well released, the timing was good, and the figures looked good, didn't they?
Well, the trick here is to ensure that if the country does lurch towards the ACT Party and the wooliness of Nicola and Luxon, whether or not the figures stack up. I tell you what caught my attention. In order to make the figures stack up, you're going to have to increase the number of relatively expensive houses you sell to foreigners, in particular Chinese.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have to deploy and weaponize the skills of our spy service to check on people using the Sky City Casino.
Yeah, okay, I get you. Yeah. None of us can afford the big mansions anyway, so I think that's pretty easy, Shane.
No. New Zealand First is all, and I've always been very much a doubting Thomas.
Okay.
As to how extensively you should let in foreign buyers into the housing market.
All right. Oliver, do you think their tax policy is a winner? And to be honest, I don't think anyone in reality believes that any of the figures stack up. It's what a government, it's an aspirational goal, the tax policy.
Well, let's put it this way. politically, it might well be a winner because it got decent coverage this week, and commentators left, right, and centre seem to be quite happy with it.
Yep.
I mean, when even Bernard Hickey praises National, and you know that...
I didn't know that.
Bernard Hickey said, actually, this would make it really hard for Labour and the Greens to attack the policy, and frankly, I can see why, because this is the kind of policy that Labour could have issued itself.
Mm.
The thing is, actually, if you go through the details, they don't make sense, too many of them at least. So take that foreign buyers tax, 15%. The same party, National, that likes to talk about getting more foreign direct investment into the country, now wants to slap the managers of these foreign investors with a several hundred thousand dollar tax on arrival if they buy a property. And if they don't want to buy a $2 million property, well, then they would be banned from buying anything whatsoever. So this is the same party that wants to increase FDI, that has a tax policy on property for foreigners that completely goes against their other ambitions. So that doesn't make sense. Apart from that, the tax indexation, I think that's a good idea to index taxes, but has anyone looked into the details? They're only getting the tax brackets up to where they should have been in 2017, at the end of the Key English government.
Yeah.
And so that completely misses the burst of inflation we've had over the last 6 years. And effectively, compared with Key English, this is a tax increase.
Mm. Where's your tax policy, Shane? What's that? New Zealand First would have a comprehensive costed tax policy, wouldn't it?
Manifesto's due out soon. Winston released three things: a handsome depreciation schedule to expedite capital productivity. Secondly, it's one thing we do agree, which is the an improvement to the adjustments, and our desire to tackle the cost of living, certainly with food, with a range of items exempt from GST.
Oh, God, are you going to go down that? Everyone hates that idea, Shane. Everyone.
I'm repeating to you what our leader has already announced. There'll be other tax measures that we'll... One thing we'll never do and we'll never agree with is the green idea of spending $10, $20 billion in buying international...
Okay, so, but you're going to go down this universally hated idea of exempting certain things from GST, right? No one likes it. Even Grant Robertson doesn't like it. And he's the Minister of Finance.
I think Grant Robertson's going to start to fire up. He's sort of been somewhat soporific over the last 9 months, but I did detect a willingness in his gait and his style in the House the other day to give it all over the next 6 weeks. So I dare say he's dreaming up a witch's brew to try and...
He's making up nasty names about Nicola Willis, isn't he?
Oh, well, it's part of the political banter and theatre, mate.
Isn't it? I thought it was terrible when we called Jacinda Ardern Cindy. We were all misogynist haters.
Mate, I'm from Kai Tai. On a regular basis, your neighbours are called worse things.
Oh, look, I have to ask you, Tanga Teroria. Do you know Tanga Teroria?
Tanga Teroria, yeah, between Whangarei and Dargaville.
Is it a ghost town?
Yeah, it's bugger all there. It's where the Wesleyans set up their early mission. The Catholics had a row with them, and I think not far from there, our leader, Winston Peters, or might have been Tangawahine, used to milk cows along with his family.
Okay, I like the place less and less as we go on. Sorry, that was a complete aside. Look, I want to deal with a non-political question now because it's a story that caught my eye and generated some quite interesting debate in the office here at the platform. There's a story kicking around about Treble Cone, a guy from, I think, Hamner or somewhere, goes up the mountain with a couple of mates and is teaching them some tricks of skiing. And the staff at Treble Cone say, I hope you're not like unlicensed coaching people, ski coaching people. We'll take your pass off you if we do. I just thought it was so un-New Zealand, Oliver, to be that sort of heavy-handed with someone helping their mates. Can you see any reason why when you're in an outdoor setting that maybe you have to pay for access to, you shouldn't be able to help your mates get better at whatever the discipline is?
Yeah, Sean, I agree. This sounds very un-New Zealand, and seriously, this is a slippery slope. No pun intended.
Absolutely, you intended that pun. It was very good. I should have thought about it earlier.
Well, but seriously, as a good free market economist, I think there are property rights involved here. So someone owns that ski slope, and if they set conditions for using the ski slope, you're not allowed to teach anyone how to ski, unless you've got a license from them. Well, that's part of the terms and conditions, and it's private property. They can do whatever they like. However, would-be skiers can also do whatever they like, and if they see these terms and conditions, they can say, bugger you, we're going somewhere else.
Yeah. Look, the thing was, I think most at the office, we came to this. If the guy was charging his mates money for Lynn to ski in this area that is groomed or whatever by the ski thing, he probably has an obligation or they have a right to ask for a cut of that fee, right? But if he's just helping his mates out, Shane, that's just helping your mates out. That's what we do, isn't it?
It's petty. It's mean-spirited. And there will no doubt have been people who have got their aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, wokapunas, relations, and rather than suffer some unwanted injury, this person is helping them to keep safer. And really, it would have been at most 5, 10, 15, 25 minutes, maybe an hour of their time. No, I just think it reflects a mean-spiritedness which is inverse proportions to the kind rhetoric of the fortunately departed Prime Minister.
Yeah. Oliver, are you a skier?
No, I tried it twice. I don't think I was particularly good at it.
I've done it 4 or 5 times. I'm not particularly good at it, though I'd love to be. Shane, a skier? I'm not picking you as a skier.
Now, not a great deal of snow on the 90-mile beach.
Yeah, yeah, okay, this is sand skiing. All right, very, very good. Guys, just back to the Parliament finishing, and it's a side, we have those Green people unfurling the banner, and I couldn't believe it, a Green MP taking a picture of it and then posting it, which is a breach of privilege. But we've also in Wellington this week, and I don't think we've got any today. I think all the idiots are probably in custody. We've had another burst of this. Well, they call themselves Save Passenger Rail. They're basically the Stop Oil protesters in New Zealand. Going out and disrupting commuter traffic in Wellington. I don't think they've got the guts. Well, actually, you couldn't do it in Auckland because it's already so stuffed and disrupted, no one would notice your protest. What do we think about people who clearly are motivated and believe what they're doing is right, even though they're morons? It seems to me we've got a very low tolerance for this sort of protest, which really seriously inconveniences people, Oliver.
Totally agree. I was affected by that yesterday. So my commute to the office, which usually takes about 15 minutes for the 6 kilometres to the office, that took about an hour. And I can tell you I was not alone because it was complete traffic chaos in Wellington yesterday. And I think this is totally unacceptable. You might have the best intentions in the world and really worthwhile political goals, but there are ways to express your wishes and to make them known to the public. This is not the way to do it. And actually, they deserve a punishment that deters them from doing it again.
Yeah. Shane, I mean, protest is legitimate in a democracy, but there's a line, isn't there, between protesting and just pissing people off?
Yeah, it's got the hallmarks of an almost middle-class indulgence. These young university students buggering up the roads and stopping people from going about their lawful business. On the question of Greenpeace and tossing down the posters or banners or whatever they were, farming and growing food is the future, the current, and has been the past economic backbone of the country. That's not going to change. Mm. Which is why I've got zero interest in imposing any levies on the emissions associated with our farming sector. But more importantly, Lord knows we need a reset in terms of how the country is coping and dealing with climate change. There's so many fanciful, uncosted ideas. And adaptation, from my perspective, has always been likely to yield better dividends than the shrill, inflammatory, intimidating...
Well, I'd be more radical than that. I say we need to scrap the net zero role and pull out of the Paris Accord. They're not scientifically sustainable policies anymore.
Yeah, but the Paris Accord allows New Zealand to grow as much food as it needs. And the world's going to go into, number one, a crisis of energy security and a host of challenges to do with food security, and New Zealand is well placed to deal with those challenges. Mm.
I mean, I get the feeling, Shane, to be honest, that the climate emergency, and there isn't a climate emergency, that the public attitude for the extremism of climate activism is really starting to wane, and we may have reached a tipping point where this fallacy, this cult, is actually going to come to an end.
I'll tell you something about politicians on this climate change stuff. They weaponize language. They try and create panic attacks within the community, and they've failed. If climate is of such urgency, why have politicians not changed the regulatory framework so that you can make investments and get resource consents in a remarkably short period of time that will improve the emissions profile? The language is hysterical, but the regulatory framework remains constipated. Mm. So where's the crisis? If there really was a crisis, why hasn't James Shaw, why hasn't Labor substantially simplified and made processes a lot more efficient? They haven't. They've complicated them even more, so the planet can't be that sick.
Yeah. Hey, Oliver, actually, on regards to this, and it might seem a strange segue, you've been off in Ireland, right, recently? Oliver? Oh, sorry, Oliver, I've taken you off here. I didn't mean to. Oliver, you've been off in Ireland. You've been off in Ireland, right, recently?
That's right, yes.
Okay, and you really liked it and you were really impressed by it.
Absolutely. Okay, I think we should be copying quite a lot of the policies from Ireland.
Where are they at on the climate change hysteria?
I didn't pick up that much, actually. It was one of the issues that didn't really feature much during our week in Ireland, probably because there were other things about Ireland that were a lot more impressive.
Okay, so they're not living in this sort of green fantasy where the planet is burning, and the Irish aren't. They're not trying to destroy their agricultural sector by being woke. From what you saw?
I didn't get that impression, no. I mean, I suspect that they signed up to all the other treaties that New Zealand signed up to. But actually, the first concern for the Irish is actually how to grow the economy and how to become an even more prosperous country. I mean, they come from a background, historical background of poverty. They wanted to move ahead. They've done everything they can to move ahead, and they succeeded. Mm. So I think we should learn that from Ireland.
Mm. Do you think we should leave the Paris Accord and forget about net zero?
Well, it's futile to discuss this because we have signed it. What I would say, though, is the way we're going about all our commitments that we have undertaken internationally, the way we are going about them is to bankrupt us first before we reach any target. So we're doing this in the least efficient way because we have an emissions trading scheme, but we're doing so much nonsense on top of that, which always costs us billions.
And you have always argued, Oliver, and it's such a good argument, the purism, the ETS is set up to work as it is. Every time a government changes the messages, sends different signals or interferes, it stuffs up the efficiency of the ETS and makes it not work.
Exactly. We would have a chance to maybe even get close to net zero if we used the ETS and we wouldn't bankrupt the economy in doing so. But with all the other measures that government takes, it is pretty obvious that we will go bankrupt as a country before we even reach net zero.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, look, guys, I also want to talk about a story we covered, kind of broke this week. We had a couple of people ring in saying they'd been applying for jobs with the Electoral Commission, which needs about to run the election, right, physically run our election. And a number of people or people who knew people were saying they were turned away from those jobs because they failed to, or they believe they failed to adequately express support for the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi. We asked the Electoral Commission about this. They said we are obligated to uphold the Treaty of Waitangi, and we may ask questions people questions about Te Reo and their commitment of the treaty when we interview people for jobs. Don Brash came on this morning and said that's outrageous. Is it, Shane Jones? Is it outrageous if all the government departments are fundamentally asking how woke you are?
One of the first things that a new government should do is disestablish their entity called Te Arawhiti, which is somewhere embedded in the entrails of the Justice Department. And that is the organisation that is driving this woke, undeliverable, impractical nonsense. Not only is it designed to keep people who don't deserve a job in work, but more importantly, it's proving to be very divisive and inversely related to the real challenge, which is unlocking productivity and dynamism to grow the economy, to give more of the whānau jobs, get the iwi focused on economic empowerment, and less of these virtue signal fantasy flights that somehow by changing the structure of how political authority is used in New Zealand and reprising the treaty and removing it from its historic moorings, that somehow New Zealand's going to be better off. It's absolute nonsense.
Yeah. Oliver?
Yeah, I agree with that. I would also say it's a bit strange that the Commission would check for knowledge of the treaty. I would have thought they're checking literacy and numeracy, because that is really important when you're counting votes, and we're losing that totally because of our education.
Hang on, Oliver, just stop the silly notion you want the best person for the job. Have you not heard of quotas and positive discrimination? And feeling good about yourself.
Sean, I'm not even looking for the best person in the job. I'm just looking for people who can count.
Actually do the job. Look, the other problem to me is this sort of discrimination, and they have been on the record saying they're worried about a whole lot of VFF people taking over the election and then claiming it's illegitimate. I would hate to see any, because I do believe that our elections, Shane, are run well by people who take their obligations to be impartial and have a, you know, and have a good process. I think our people at the Electoral Commission have hitherto been very serious and very good at that. And I don't want to suggest that, you know, the Russians are going to interfere or anything like that, Shane.
Oh, look, mate, it's just all contrived. It's an absolute load of rubbish. I've voted on numerous occasions. I remember the school teachers running our elections at the Awanui School as a young man. We've got no shortage of people capable of running an adequate process, counting and checking for fidelity.
Yeah.
So, i.e. obeying the law, ensuring you're on the roll. Yeah. I just feel that it's an example of this grossly divisive ideology that has been spawned and hopefully will be uprooted in a future regime.
Yeah, and we do hope that. And Oliver, I'll tell you one thing about New Zealand. We'd let any bugger vote. You just have to be passing through and you can probably get a vote in New Zealand.
Yeah, I was surprised, actually. Pretty much on arrival, I was allowed to vote in referenda and elections. And I did, but I've become a citizen now, so I feel better about it.
Yeah. Look, finally, guys, and I've put this off till last, and we've tried not to talk about it on the program this week, but you can't be a New Zealander or a new New Zealander or an adoptive New Zealander, Oliver, without knowing something about rugby and the All Blacks. And last weekend, though I didn't see the game and will never remember it, you know, past next weekend, the All Blacks suffered their largest test defeat in their history, in the history of rugby in New Zealand. I was going to blame some guy on a motorbike that Marimer Davidson didn't see, but Shane, are you concerned about the Rugby World Cup coming up and what happened last weekend?
Oh, mate, I remember being in the Waipoa Forest. Unfortunately, there was no radio coverage, no TV coverage, so I didn't have to suffer the misery of watching the Poms waste us several years ago.
Yeah.
No, that was not a flash result. But, you know, Sam Kane, I think he was pretty honest. He said, look, it's not our finest moment, but I'm genuinely of the view that we've learnt some harsh lessons that we'll bring to the fore when we actually get into it.
Shane, we do not learn lessons in rugby. We hand them out. Okay?
Sean, your name is Sean, mine is Shane. We're a similar vintage. That's how we grew up. We remember the Colin Meads. We remember the Lahores, the Sid Goings. There's a new generation, mate. And this generation...
Losing's never okay. I don't care how they feel about it.
I don't like losing, and sadly I've wasted too much time chasing the Warriors, but as my tamariki, my kids have said, give them another go, Papa.
Oh, jeez. Oliver, even you must feel it. The shame, the ignominy, the national disgrace.
Yeah, I can feel it, but not about the rugby. No, I mean, seriously, I'm a long-suffering supporter of FC Schalke 04. It's a football club now in the second German division. Last weekend we lost 0-2 at home to Holstein Kiel. I've got enough reasons to suffer. I don't need rugby.
Okay, you're a soccer supporter, so you would have had no idea. I shouldn't have even asked you the question. I don't know why I had you on the program. No, I had you both on the program because you were fun and entertaining. And I guess really, too, guys, we're into it now. We've got 5-6 weeks of campaigning. We've got no rubbish going on at Parliament. And I think we're all going to have an awful lot of fun. I thank you both for joining us this morning. Shane Jones, New Zealand First MP, and Dr. Oliver Hartwich, our favourite economist from the New Zealand Initiative. All right. We have cracked through it this morning. Now, if you're going back, I'd say this would be a great show to, if you're a Platform Plus member, download and listen to the highlights and listen to the interviews at your convenience. I just want to go back through what we've done this morning. 7 o'clock this morning, we had Philip Crump revealed to be Thomas Cranmer, alt blogger, journalist, and I think all-round good guy. So we had a long chat with him this morning and found out who he really was. We had Don Brash after 7:30 talking about the strange criteria for working on the elections this year. We've had Doug Hastie, our mate from Charnui Farms, and we just finished a great Free Speech Friday. Still to come, we're going to be chatting about prostate cancer. And Marty is going to join us, Martin Devlin, to talk about why rugby, the New Zealand Rugby Union, isn't fit for purpose. Now, Sean, just quickly, this text. Got a workmate, Sean, who's in trouble with his wife, boss, had an argument last night about him listening to yourself on the platform. She said you're a bit of a hothead and a controversial broadcaster. As you can guess, she is a Labour lover. According to her, Tova is the real podium of truth. All I say is she works in a very woke position at a university. Keep spreading open and honest conversation. She can't handle the truth. Thank you very much indeed for that text.